From KQED Public Radio on the California Report, this is the Capital Notes podcast for Friday, April 8th. I'm John Myers from KQED, and this week it's a little bit of a different podcast for us for a couple of reasons. First of all, I've been away from the state capitol for several days this week, so as you podcast listeners sometimes know, the schedules don't always align between myself and Anthony York from the Los Angeles Times to get in the studio and talk about what's been going on in politics. However, in the middle of the week, Anthony and I were both on a panel speaking to a group of folks who were in Sacramento, folks from the School of Hospitality Management at the Cal State system, the CSU system. And they asked us to talk about what's going on in the world of politics. And so we thought we would take that conversation, which I recorded on Wednesday of this week, and use it as the podcast this week. It's a little bit of us talking about what's going on. It's a little broader than just the week's events, but hopefully it'll work out. You'll hear, of course, it was not recorded in a studio, but I think I've worked on the audio enough that you'll be able to hear that through this podcast. So see if it's interesting to you. You'll hear at the beginning, we're asked a question by the moderator of the panel, Jot Condi of the California Restaurant Association, who was participating with the folks from CSU in this. And then there was one other question in the middle, I don't know if the audio comes through or not, that actually was asked to us by the chancellor of the Cal State system, Charles Reed, who has been talking to Governor Brown a lot in the last few days about what the impact of an all-cuts budget might be on higher ed and the CSU system. And Chancellor Reed asked Anthony and I if we thought the state was, in fact, ungovernable, as a lot of folks say. And you'll hear us opine a little bit on that, a small amount. Anyway, so here's our conversation with the folks from the Cal State system at an event in Sacramento midweek. Next week, we'll go back to the studio, hopefully, and talk about all the things that have been going on. But here's our here's the conversation, and again, begins with questions about where we are now.
Give us sort of a sense for both of
yes,
you.
Yes, give what, us.
Just give, what do you see? You know,
enlighten us.
What's the tone?
Well, everything is so day to day. It does seem like we've entered a new phase now of this budget negotiation. For the first 2 months of his governorship, Brown was focused on trying to get four Republicans to support his plan for a June special election. That phase is now over. June is no longer an option. The things that you hear talked about, the governor himself today, I'm sure you'll be reading in the papers tomorrow if it's not on your Twitter feeds already. The governor is talking openly about a September election or a November election. A September election would probably still involve Republican votes for some sort of legislative compromise. A November election would probably be an initiative signature gathering campaign. I think it's very easy to begin drawing parallels between the special election in 2009 or even the special election in 2005 when you see some of these pieces sort of falling into place. I think there are some important differences. Brown was unable to get, or has been unable thus far, to get the four Republicans needed to put these tax extensions, as he's calling them, before voters. But the sense I get from him is that he doesn't want to charge ahead the way Schwarzenegger did in 05, with just the business community behind him and antagonizing labor. We all know how that one ended in 05 for Schwarzenegger. Brown is trying very hard to keep a coalition together of business interests and labor unions. In 2009, there was a split in labor. The teachers union, which is, I believe, the largest lobbying group in the state, they supported the special election package. The Service Employees International Union, which is another huge Democratic constituency, was opposed to Proposition 1A, and there was a strange alliance between SEIU and the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association that helped kill the special election in 2009. Going forward, I think Brown, is cognizant of the lessons of 09, wants to make sure that the House of Labor is united, but also wants at least neutrality from the business community. I mean, I think in the best case scenario, there would be a deal that the business community could support, that would include tax extensions, that would have some regulatory reforms, that would have some changes to the state pension system, and perhaps some sort of limit on future state spending, some sort of spending cap that doesn't affect education. Those details are yet to be worked out, but I think that the negotiation now is not as much with the Republican lawmakers, but directly with some of those interests. I mean, groups like the Chamber, I'm sure, you know, other business groups that have been courted aggressively by Brown have been involved in this discussion from the very beginning. But now I think Brown is just no longer dealing with the their legislative intermediaries. Will it work? You know, that's to be determined. But I do think that Brown has decided that the next phase now is outside of the Capitol. He's going to be hitting the road this weekend, going to Riverside, going to Orange County, and I think that over the next couple of months, he's going to be traveling the state. You're going to see him with lots of people with badges are going to be standing around him, a lot of teachers, and he's going to try to drum up public support for his budget plan. He'll release a revised budget on May 16th, and it's a little unclear what he'll be doing, whether it's going to be sort of a multiple choice, either outlining what a budget would look like if it were balanced only with spending cuts, and which cuts could be avoided if these revenues are part of the equation. So, you know, will it be successful? That all remains to be seen. I think Brown has a lot of work to do. Some public opinion polls indicate that there's not a whole lot of support for extending these taxes. If we have an election in September or November, it would be a tax increase unless there's some legislative hybrid option, which if you guys are interested, we can talk about that. I can't imagine that you would be interested, though. And that's really, I think, where we are. I mean, I think, you know, just sort of big picture that Brown is going to be talking to people outside of the legislative leadership, outside this group of Republican, small group of Republican lawmakers he's been trying to forge a compromise with. He's going to try to create some pressure, some grassroots pressure from cops, from firefighters, from teachers, to try to help forge some kind of compromise that everyone can deal with. So something to look forward to in the weeks ahead.
I think that's all good. So, look, two for the price of one. I would align myself with the comments of my colleague. Sounds like I'm on the floor of the legislature. I think what's interesting about where things are, though, too, if we step back just for a moment, is that you know the governor came into office clearly with a strategy to work the inside game. To in effect use the power of his own persuasion, I think he thought, to make things different than they have been in Sacramento. Perhaps that's a belief that he alone had the power to convince people to do what they wouldn't do. Perhaps it's a reflection of how the capital process worked when he left. I mean, you could buy into lots of different theories there, but clearly the shift that Anthony laid out that seems right is an acknowledgement that interest groups matter and interest groups dictate the way politics works in California and having to work those interest groups. And I think you saw that even toward the end of whatever I would call Act One of this saga, of his careful courting of people in the business community, of his of several different things that happened. So I think there's an acknowledgement that interest groups, you know, are the dominant force, that governors no longer can pull lawmakers aside and give them a glass of wine and slap them on the back and say, you know, what's it going to take to get you to vote for this? Because that ain't the way it works. So I think it's going to be interesting to see him evolve into this new strategy. I mean, I'm reminded often of something that the governor said when he was running last year, and it's very much a Jerry Brownism. I mean, I think a lot of us of our generation who were not here when he was governor before are learning them ourselves, the Jerry Brownisms. They're adding new chapters to the Jerry Brownisms. And the one I was just thinking of while Anthony was talking was the one where the governor kept saying, you know, that I learned as a Jesuit to be in the world but not of it. And it makes you think for a moment. But there's something to that to me about this strategy of you know, the governor is looking to be a political player, but casting the discussion and the debate in a non-political way. And that's tough to do. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger was not successful at that for various reasons. But he tried very hard to say until the last day of his seventh year in office, I'm not a politician, which probably wasn't true by the last day of the seventh year. And I think that's a very tough thing to pull off. I mean, the public wants, you know, the polling seems to say the public wants to believe that somebody knows what they're doing, but they're also very distrustful of what happens. I think one of the things that's been difficult for Governor Brown, and for all of you too, I mean, you're all obviously very interested in what happens in higher education funding. What's been very difficult, it seems, as though if the governor went this strategy that we all asked him about for weeks and weeks and weeks of why don't you lay out what the ramifications are of an all-cuts budget? Why don't you lay out the all-cuts budget? You know, and he had lots of reasons. But one of the reasons that you hear a lot around town is the voters won't believe you either way. The voters, you know, don't believe what they hear coming out of Sacramento, in part because they don't trust politicians. I would say perhaps in part because the last several years of budgets have been gimmicked to death, where people are starting to feel the effects ever so more out in the world. But for a long time, unless they had students in school or they depended on other government services on a day-to-day basis, they didn't feel it. They didn't feel these multi-billion dollar deficits. They were moved around the core issues of what government does. And so, in effect, you have this huge disconnect between what the public thinks the problem is and how to solve it, and everyone saying, look how severe this is. And so I think that's going to be one of the tests that the governor has now, if he's going to start this roadshow up, is how does he get that attention of the public? How does he get them to really buy in to the reality? You look at the polling, and the polling still just amazes me, that you ask people, you know, what do they want to do to solve the problem? Well, we want to cut waste. Okay. What else? Well, we want to cut waste. Great. What else? And some waste. And then you ask them where funding goes in this state. And the number one answer they give you is they think most of their dollars go to prisons, which is a complete misread, obviously, of the budget. And you can forgive people for not getting that, except when you ask them, who would you rather have make budget decisions, lawmakers in Sacramento or you at the ballot box? Me at the ballot box. Therein lies a problem, too, if the public doesn't understand the decisions they're making. So, you know, understatement of the year. Governor's got his work cut out for him over the next few weeks. And I think these interest groups, their ability to kind of help him coalesce the message will be interesting. And I think, too, what happens at the inside the Capitol in the legislature will be interesting. I mean, does he walk away from that process almost completely? What happens to the Republicans who were negotiating with him? What do they want? I mean, you know, at the risk of going back down the 7-page list of 53 items, which wasn't really completely 53 items, to be fair. They were subject areas that detractors counted every one of them and called them 53 items. But what out of that list do they want would be acceptable to agree to an election? What kind of changes to public employee pensions, since that's a huge one? What kind of spending cap? I mean, we keep hearing these different little bits and pieces about how it would be fashioned. But, you know, the devil's really in the details. So it's going to be an interesting time. I mean, people ask me, am I tired of covering the chaos of the California budget problem? And my first answer is yes. And my second answer is yes, but it presents itself as a different discussion almost every time. And certainly now with a new governor and a new challenge to appeal to the people. And I think, frankly, the stakes being higher than they ever have been. I mean, certainly all of you know that, since an all-cuts budget could easily double what you're facing in the CSU system. The chancellor knows that better than anyone. Actually, we should let him talk. He was talking to the governor. He knows more than we do. But it's going to be a very interesting time to watch this move forward. And I think, I mean, I don't know what you think about the number of weeks, really, that the governor's got to put the tide over in his favor. I don't know what the over-under is there. But it's not as long as a lot of people would like. I mean, and certainly we're already into round two of that, since he thought March 10th was his first date. So,
I question. Given the prospects, I'm just going to ask you a question. I'll talk loud so you can have that. But what are the he's out now, or he's on his way out amongst the people. Is there discussion amongst sort of the Capitol press corps? Is there an over under on maybe not just how long does he have, but is there anything there relative to this strategy? Is there discussion of prospects of his success in turning the voters to the point of view that this we need to extend these taxes, otherwise an all cuts budget is just dire for us, so we support what are the prospects?
Part of the problem with reporters, just a complete disclosure here, is that we root for one clear story or the other clear story. The worst thing possible is a muddling through for this that I have to explain to people. Frankly, I would prefer to write the governor wins, yay, people throw roses at his feet and everything's fine, or the governor loses and we cut the hell out of everything. And I don't mean that to be that I'm heartless about that. I've got kids, I've got things that I live in the state. But some clear-cut answer, I think, is what probably the press would really root for, because I think it would finally show some movement, some change, some something, rather than another year or two of muddling through of things that continue to just feel like we never get any movement toward trying to get at what's wrong in the state and how to fix it. But that's an internal press thing, not really the answer.
But in terms of whether or not this is a winnable campaign, I think the polling, what little polling we've seen some private polling and there have been some public polls, and you can really take the data and read whatever you want into the polling.
Therein lies the problem with polling.
John alluded to some of this stuff about how people don't want their taxes to go up, but they want to protect education. And guess what? I mean, if you're talking about K through 14 plus the higher education system, you're talking about half the state budget. So how do you cut another $13 billion without? Brown protected K-12 in his initial budget. The community college fees went up by $10, and $500 million was cut from CSU and UC. So I think a lot of the challenge for Brown, and I think part of the reason they're getting outside of Sacramento, is that framing the debate is going to be very important. The governor understands that. He's very savvy politically and realizes that you can only beat your head against a wall for so long in Sacramento before you have to start preparing and doing the spade work for a campaign, because one way or another, a campaign has always been part of the governor's plan. This was always going to have to be part of his plan. And I think he was starting to hear some criticism from folks in organized labor and his natural allies that the case has not been made to the public. He's been in Sacramento, he's been cloistered in Sacramento for too long, and that, we saw a PPIC poll, from January to March, the numbers show that the direction was not the direction that the governor wants this to go. Things are moving in the wrong direction, and I think some of that is a sense that that the public is not being educated the way that the administration is ultimately going to have to educate the public if he wants their support. So is it winnable? I mean, I would say that it is. But again, I think this unity, not only within labor, but some sort of detente between business and labor and any kind of bipartisan support that the governor can get will be critical for the political perception of what he's proposing.
Well, and I would just tack on to that for a minute. I mean, Anthony and I have talked before. We do a weekly, I guess I could call it a smartass express of a podcast, which, by the way, you can subscribe to. Anthony's usually the one that's more smart alecky than me. But that actually makes it better. But we've talked about this before, that, I mean, I think that one of the things that we were all very interested in is as Jerry Brown came back and for this third go-round as governor, but obviously a very big time that had moved since he was last governor, was there going to be an education process for him about how the state had changed since he left the governor's office in 1983? And could he use that as an education process for the public as well to help them understand? I mean, the governor clearly said, I didn't make this mess several times during the campaign. I'm just trying to figure out how to solve it. And think just for a moment, if you can, about where he was and where things were in the state when he left. He left in 83 before, I would argue, the full effects of Prop 13 were felt, which was 1978. He left in 83, which was 5 years before Prop 98, which made a dramatic change to the budget and the way that the budget formulas and process works. You know, he has come into a process that is very, very different. And so if he's able to use his own process of learning about that in some way with the public, perhaps that helps. But I do think that some people have wondered, why hasn't that happened yet? Of course, the governor is trying very hard to work a political deal, which, you know, seems to have been really tough to do. But I'll be fascinated to watch how long the governor's coalition on the left side of the spectrum is willing to play the game, because effectively he's asking them to go out on a limb. I mean, in a lot of ways, you know, we're hearing again. I mean, look at the private poll that whose poll was it? The higher income tax.
CFT,
California Faculty of Federation of Teachers, excuse me, not faculty, it's your group, or not your group, but affiliated in higher ed. But the CFT commissioned a poll that showed huge popularity for increasing income taxes on high income earners in California. And the poll numbers, if they are right, show support all across the political spectrum, left, center, right, independents, everybody. How long do some of those groups hold their fire about alternate ways to bring revenue in and solve the problem and give the governor the space to continue to negotiate a 5-year temporary tax package that shifts money but then goes away, and how do you fund the programs after that, and are they the best taxes, and on and on and on and on. So, I mean, it's going to be, I wouldn't say it's not winnable, but it's a heck of a fight. It's a heck of an interesting challenge he's got in front of him.
Can I ask you
please
a question?
Yeah.
Two people that cover politics every day and have for some time.
Something wrong with us, in other words. Yeah.
Is California government?
I'm trying to think not only about how to answer that question, but what the answer actually is. I don't know. I came to Sacramento in 1997, just started covering politics. And when I came, there was a real difference between the Senate and the Assembly at the time, because Pete Wilson was governor. And in the Senate, you had all of the pre-term limited Assembly members who had graduated to the Senate. Right, 1996 was the first year that term limits began kicking in. And so the Senate really was sort of the to use a university phrase, the upper division classes, right, the graduate program. And the Assembly was, there were a bunch of neophytes.
Was the Assembly like an introductory class, a lecture class, where there's like...
It was. It was, every bit of people were passing notes. It was very...
I wanted to finish the analogy. That was good.
But there was a... And so Bill Lockyer was the... who's now the state treasurer, was the head of the state Senate. Cruz Bustamante, who... I don't know where he is now. He's in Dinuba somewhere, right?
Elk Grove, I think.
He was the Assembly speaker. And there was a real... there was a real difference between that. I mean, the power nexus at that time in the Capitol was Wilson, Lockyer in the Senate, and then Kurt Pringle, who's just spent the last 8 years as mayor of Anaheim, was the last Republican speaker of the Assembly, was the Assembly Republican leader at the time, and that's how the deal got made. Now, the deal is not... Brown was never negotiating with leadership on the Republican side.
They don't know how to make it.
Well, and that was a constant criticism. They didn't know how to close. And they would even say, hey, we don't have a process here. And so I do think that there has been... part of what we're seeing is the effects of term limits, I mean, undoubtedly. No matter what you think about term limits, whether it's a good or a bad thing, in terms of making the mechanics of government efficient... it's hurt. It's hurt the state. Now, you can say maybe that's a good thing, that government is not efficient. But that, laid on top of what we've seen over the last 15 years with, you know, John talked about Prop 13 and Prop 98, but there have been so many measures now that have restricted the moving parts. I mean, there's protections for local government, there's protections for transportation, there's, you know, you now need 2/3 to raise any kind of fee, not just a tax. And so we've done a pretty good job of tying ourselves into some pretty intricate knots. And whether some of those threads can sort of be unwoven, or you can take what's left and have something governable. It's a real question. I do think that the elephant in the room, the thing that Brown has sort of alluded to with some of his realignment proposals, and the thing that he's been very careful not to mention directly, but I do think that we're heading towards a conversation about Proposition 13 in some way, shape, or form. Brown, part of his realignment proposal, has already talks about lowering the vote threshold for locals to make it easier for them to raise taxes. Well, Brown said that. What he didn't say is that would be a modification of Proposition 13. And so what Brown is trying to do, he's been somewhat professorial in his approach, trying to really give people a holistic view of sort of how we got here. Whether or not he'll be able to do that and have that honest conversation in a way that, you know, doesn't have the sort of electrified third rail of state politics, where you can't mention Prop 13 no matter what. He's not ready to go there yet, and I think he's seeing how difficult it is to just have a conversation about the budget, let alone something that voters hold so dear as Prop 13. But all by way of saying that, I don't know if this state is governable. I think that the next few months, voters need to understand. They need to understand the connection between the taxes they pay and the services they get. And the state basically does a couple of core functions. They build roads, they have parks, they run prisons and higher education.
Educate, incarcerate, Medicaid.
Right. Well, but
the locals,
when you're talking about schools and health and human services, the 75% of the budget, those are all local services that now are run through the state. We've built this Rube Goldberg machine, because of Prop 13. And so, I think at some point you have to separate the state functions from the local functions. And people are going to have to decide, do they want all the public universities to be privatized, our state parks to be privatized, our prisons to be privatized or not? And if not, then what are they willing to pay for? It's a difficult conversation. It's a difficult conversation to start. It's a difficult conversation to have. And it's one that Brown is trying to have. Whether he'll be successful, I guess the next few months will be instrumental in answering that.
I'll just answer shortly. I wouldn't be so bold as to say that I know whether or not it's governable, but as someone who grew up back east, who moved to California in the early 90s for graduate school and stayed, it never ceases to amaze me how much, and it goes back to direct democracy, how many decisions are made by the voters where the voters don't completely know what they're doing. Not because the voters are dense, but because the system is just not set up to give them the information. I mean, we try as we might, but anybody who can dig through these measures and understand the full impact of them, and also understand the context, that every time you touch the budget or the spending process, it impacts some other part of the budget spending process. No campaign was more emblematic of that to me than the one to sell bonds for stem cell research. It had tremendous public support. It sounded great. Let's cure cancer. Let's borrow. Let's sell bonds and cure cancer. Selling bonds, we never said we were going to borrow money. Careful in the political campaign, we're selling bonds, which sounds better. But not understanding that those kinds of things are paid out of the general fund. They are paid back as general obligation bonds, largely, through the general fund. And that debt service now is the single fastest growing part of the general fund. It now eclipses what you get in higher ed in a lot of ways when you break it out. I mean, it's so the governable question to me becomes whether or not the public is willing to crack open the whole system and look at it. Perhaps I spend too much time reading other journalists' work. Joe Matthews and Mark Paul, who wrote this book, California Crack Up, that gets lots of attention, where they make the case for a constitutional convention, which I think is a pretty compelling case, because I think all of these ballot measures that are incremental progress don't necessarily get at the root of the system, but cracking it open, I mean, that'd be a heck of a story to cover. That would be a fun story as a reporter to cover, is to watch the three-ring circus that a convention would be. But I mean, I guess I feel like if someone doesn't crack open the whole thing and look at it, we continue to go down this path of little fix here, little fix there, hoping like hell the economy bails us out. I mean, the economy has bailed out California several times. Look at what happened, obviously, we all know, in the late 90s and that boom, and then we went back down. And actually before that, I'm only being in recent history. And, you know, California has always come back, but to what amount and what hole are we going to be in when it comes back next time? I mean, that to me is the most fascinating part. I've never gotten the stat out of my head, and then I'll stop, that back when Schwarzenegger, you know, it was that era, it was 2006, I seem to remember. We'd gone through the special election. We hadn't hit the world economic crisis, but the state was still struggling. Other states around the country were getting their books in order. We were still running deficits and coming up with all these interesting gimmicks, clever things to solve the budget. And we were short on money, and it was, I think it was actually Schwarzenegger's re-election year. It was 2006. And the Google IPO happened, and the Google multimillionaires happened, and they cashed in those stock options. And the state franchise tax board was rolling in money to the point where the stat is that 50 taxpayers out of the state of California accounted for $1 billion of general fund revenue. I mean, and I could just see Schwarzenegger having schnitzel and doing a dance in the backyard. Actually, I couldn't see that. Actually, given the cartoon of the governor, perhaps he was. Have you seen the cartoon? Yeah, I digress. But it was another California miracle, and it delayed the day of reckoning yet again. And I just wonder how many more of those come out of the bag. How many more can we rely on versus really opening it up and looking at what the government does, and as Anthony says, you know, what people want from their government. 38 million people, a nation state. Someone's got to decide what the appropriate size and responsibility of government is. So,
and that again was a panel event that Anthony Orrick and I did in the middle of the week for folks from the Cal State School of Hospitality Management. They were in town and asked us to come talk about what's going on in politics. And so, given the schedules, I thought it would be interesting to use that as the podcast, a little bit of a sense of where things are, and probably a more macro sense than we often do on the podcast of the week's ups and downs. But we'll go back to the week's ups and downs next week. We'll have a lot to talk about, I'm sure. Governor Brown's trip around the state through the weekend, talking about the budget to different groups. Republicans taking out the state. Democrats in the legislature talking about they're going on the road. Everybody's going on the road. But we'll go back to Sacramento. So until next time, I'm John Myers from KQED. Thanks, as always, for listening.